Okay, so moving on to number four. This thing that I'm calling the ego, this collection of your behaviours and the beliefs that you have, these beliefs that have been given to you from outside of yourself, from the earliest moment, they've been given to you by your family, they've been given to you by society, all of this thing that you think you are. Oh no, you're not. That's all been given to you from outside of yourself. It's been formed almost externally, but we believe we are those things. I am depressed. I am angry. No. There's depression in you. There's anger within you. You aren't that. This is no good, me talking about this. What really matters is you finding a portal, perhaps is a good word, any kind of portal through to this deeper part of you. Have any of you seen something beautiful in your lives? You've turned around to the person that you're with and you've said, look at that. That's beautiful. And you've explained what it is. And they've gone, oh yes, so it is. What you've done there, the only way you could have recognized that that was beautiful is that deeper part of you. It is that deeper part of you that recognized that something was beautiful. And what you've done is very quickly, you've gone from that being, that present moment thing that you are, you've taken it up into ego, which is all about words and thinking and descriptions, and you've lost touch with what that thing is. This is beautiful. It's a wonderful exercise to do this. Is the next time you have that, oh, look at that, the trees are starting to turn. You know, I have a tree outside my house that once it's turned, it looks like it's on fire. It's fantastic. What I'm trying to notice is the moments when I see the thing that's wonderfully beautiful and see if I can make the gap between noticing it and my brain labelling it and boxing it and turning it into something I can package. See if you can make that longer. That's just one of many portals that prove that you have this deeper being part already within you. There are lots of examples of this. So this more surface part, this ego, this thinker, this is where I'm moving on to number four. One example of a facet of this part of you is it depends on things. It depends on attachments. It depends on surviving. The ego needs, it forms addictions and dependencies. For example, you feel like you're not okay unless you get such and such a thing. That's a really good example. I've left a nice big piece of paper, blank space here for you to write in what your particular attachments might be. One of the most painful things about this whole waking up, this spiritual awakening or whatever you're wanting to describe it as, is the moment that you make the flick from believing that you are those things to realizing that you're not. That's tough. Because there is a huge part of you that for the whole of your life has believed that it is those things. And if it suddenly finds that its identity and its survival is suddenly called into question by you realizing that you're not it, it can kick up a fuss. So those of you who are seriously interested in developing, I'm not assuming that you haven't done this already, but maybe I'm starting off at one end and catching all of you in these kind of statements. The more you wake up, the more you develop present moment awareness, the more this part of you will kick up a fuss because it wants to survive. That's what the ego is about. It's about me, self-contained, on my own, I am, and I will survive. I think, therefore, I am. So, again, I'm nicking something from Anthony DeMello here. I'm not going to attempt to try and wake you up, because if you're comfortably believing or in the delusion that you are your thinking mind and there's nothing else, it's a bit like somebody being in bed under a lovely duvet. You know, there's not a lot you can do to go and wake somebody up who's in this beautifully comfortable state. The horrible thing is, and I get this mostly with clients that come to me, remember I was talking yesterday about whether your primary motivation is moving away from pain or towards pleasure. We usually wake up when the going has got so tough, things are so painful, that that's the only option left to us. That's how most people are forced into realizing that they aren't their depression, the depression is in them, because if they were their depression, they're not going to survive. Don't let that happen to you. It doesn't need to. Are you afraid? Are you anxious? Do you desire something? Well, the question should be, what is it that the ego thinks at that moment that it depends on? It tends to be fears. I mean, there's some theories that the ego's primary fear, I don't know if you all heard the question, other examples of what signifies an ego in its dependence mode, in its surviving and holding on. There are theories, I'm not entirely sure, because I haven't necessarily felt this within myself, and I'm only talking to you about things that I have experienced myself, is the fear of death is supposed to be the end fear that the ego is scared of, which is why from the East you get a lot of meditation on the corpse decomposing, cheery stuff. Anthony De Mello's got a book. It could be in the back of Sedano. I'm not entirely sure which it is, but you can get hold of some of these meditations on the decomposition of your own body, on your bones and all the rest of it. And it's supposed to. This is a good face. That was a great face. Let's not go there. Green belt next time. I'll do a session on the decomposition of. But this is supposed to highlight that that's the primary thing that the ego is afraid of. So all of the layers of the onion outside of that are supposed to be a really good exercise that I do with my clients to find out what the irrational fear is. Because again, yesterday I was saying that you say to your partner, I'm not going to go to the party. Why not? Because I... And you come up with some excuse as to why you won't go. Or you're having an argument with somebody. You come in. They turn the TV over and it's Terry Wogan and you say, this isn't what was really bothering you, but you legitimise the feeling you're having about this person. I hate Terry Wogan. Because you can't say what's irrationally bothering you. You have to, so give it back. I was watching something else. And you don't hate Terry Wogan. I do. And within 2 or 3 years, you've launched the We Hate Terry Wogan Society because you believe the nonsense excuse that you gave. So one thing that you can do if you're interested in finding what is at the core of your particular onion is going through quite a difficult exercise. I recommend going through it with somebody who's possibly who can help you through this, but do try it yourself, is the what then exercise, is to ask, okay, so you don't want to go to the party. If you did go to the party, what then? What next? What would happen? Well, I'd be left in a corner. What then? Well, I wouldn't be worth anything. What then? Well, I wouldn't have any friends. But you can do this to find out what it is that the ego is worrying about. It could be before you were enlightened, you used to be depressed. What about after you become enlightened? You're still depressed, unfortunately. Only the depression is within you. It isn't you. Do you see the difference? It's about identifying with things, and you can find this in your own language. I am, or there is, within me. You could think about conscious and unconsciousness. When you're conscious, you're able to observe what's happening within yourself. When you're unconscious, it has taken you over. And that'll happen to all of us all the time. A great way to become conscious very quickly is some of the exercise that I did at the beginning, is what can you feel, what can you hear right at this moment? There's no way that you can do that exercise without being fully conscious in the present moment. A great exercise to try is tonight when you're going to bed, and the people in the tent next to you at 3 o'clock in the morning are very, very drunk, and they're doing a lighting their farts game. So much so that the tent is illuminated within. What happens? The self at that moment, if you feel any resistance to what is your, you start to become annoyed, that's a really good indication that the self, this ego part, is meeting resistance. It's going to start to take you over, because 10 minutes later you're outside the tent, you're cutting their guy lines. So therefore, your annoyance has completely taken you over. Or, an interesting exercise, is to maybe try and become invisible. Realise that it's your ego, almost like a solid wall, is where the annoyance is hitting, and that annoyance is happening within you. Try and become invisible as an observer of this ego within you. Try and become invisible to the noise as it comes, and see if you can allow it to pass right through you. And go back to sleep again. Some people are really good at this, and they annoy me, but anyway. Okay, I think I've said enough about that. Attachments. Hopefully you've maybe had a chance to write a few things down. I'll pause for 30 seconds as you write some of the things that you find yourself becoming attached to. Success. Career. I'm attached to being right. Oh, hello. Oh, right. If you're not depressed and you're all right, then that's fine. If the equation is a little bit like, I won't be okay unless, or there's distress and there's suffering in me because of, or it's your fault, and those sort of things. Yes, there are people that are okay. I have to keep reminding myself of that. There's a few hallmarks of what I think a healthy spirituality are. I'm just going to race through these because I'm going to return to them later, but I'm moving on to number five. These four things that I think, from my trawl through all sorts of different routes and schools of mysticism, and this, what I'm not talking about is an esoteric, theoretical thing. I'm talking about real, practical, grounded, down-to-earth, it actually makes a difference stuff. I think there are four key ingredients to this, and I will endeavour to give very practical examples. I mean, the work that I've done online through sites like ReJesus and Embody and other things that I've done myself are all full of practical examples to go and try something out. Okay, so these four things that I think are really important, don't write these down, I'll return to them, but I want you to listen to the four. Self-knowledge has to be the beginning. Understanding of yourself has to be a foundational part of this. And with it, number two is self-observation, being able to observe yourself non-judgmentally. Number three, stillness. If your exercise, if your discipline, whatever it is, doesn't include stillness, stillness is one of the best formal portals through to this deeper part of you. And by finding a formal portal, formal practice, a formal exercise that fosters stillness, and by that I mean it's not a nothing, it's an actual activity, stillness, you're stilling your thoughts. If you don't have that, you're not really storing up a bank account of something which will be useful in the rest of life. The fourth one is presence, and I wanted to list those because this brings me on to number five. Your attention can be in one of four places. Often, attention is described as either being in the present, in the future, or in the past. I'd like to open that up a little bit more, find it a little bit more helpful for you to be able to analyse where your attention is. Hopefully it's here, but it might not be. It might be of something that's happening later on today or happened yesterday. All these things, going back to number two where I've said happiness, trust, love, wisdom, all of these things only function in the present moment. They can only be experienced in the present moment. You can only enjoy them in the present moment. But if you have been overtaken by your thinking will be in one of these four places, or maybe I should say one of these six places. Do you know what it's like to have your attention captured? There's a job interview you just had, you haven't heard the result yet. Your attention is quite captured over the period of time waiting to find out. Or there might be something happening in a couple of weeks' time, your attention is fully captured by that. You just can't shake it. Do you know what that's like? Have you had that? Has your attention ever been captured by something that is happening in the present moment? It rarely is. It's normally captured by something that's happened in the past or is going to be happening in the future. Or it could be that your attention is scattered. So the good place to be is right now, and your attention can either be focused, very, very focused, on the one thing that it is that you are doing in the present moment, or it can be open in the present moment. Have you ever driven down the motorway? I know you've all done this, and some of you know what I'm going to say. You've driven down the motorway, and suddenly there's a bridge and trees and hills. And hold on a minute, the last time you were aware, there were houses, lights, and you're in the city. What on earth happened between now and then? That's a fairly good example of your attention being scattered or captured or whatever. When you're driving and, hold on, the car in front of you, all the red lights are going on, whatever, your attention becomes very focused. You can't help it. Your attention becomes very focused at that moment. Or there's a crisis, somebody's been hurt, you know, something's gone wrong. Again, your attention comes into the present moment. Those of you who are emergency service people, there might well be people here, presumably you function in that present moment. You've lost all sense of time, etc. Or your attention can be open in the moment. That may be what happens in some sorts of meditation exercises. Your attention becomes very open. It's not focused. Although using an anchor in meditation is very useful, whether it's a mantra, which is an internal anchor, or you have an external anchor to bring you into the present moment, which is maybe your hearing, one of your senses. Okay, I'm just going to read my notes, because believe it or not, I might have written something fascinating that's worth saying. A few things about the present moment. The present moment is as it is. It's all you have. There is only the present moment, believe it or not. The future and the past aren't real. We are so exhausted by getting captured by the future and the past. We absolutely exhaust ourselves. And the present moment is the only moment where there is any love or happiness. Nothing can survive that can be destroyed in the present. And I'm just going to leave that one as it is. The only things that are real are now, sounding a little bit esoteric and vague. In terms of the future, which is often where our mind gets preoccupied, I'd like to talk about trust. Trust is what you have to cope with the future. Trust that question, what would wise you do? And a part of trusting the future is accepting. Trust is crucial to believing that everything necessary will be available in the present, not that present now, but when you get to it. Eternal life is now. I talked yesterday about key actions, and the key action being what will set off some kind of change in your life. And Confucius said, it's easier today to triumph over evil habits than it will be tomorrow. That's again a comment about the right here and right now. If there's something that you know you have to do, there's something that you have to face, something that you've been putting off for a long time, it is easier to do it now in the present moment than it is to put it off. I told a story about giving up smoking, and it was me hearing that quote that made me give up smoking, because I realised that that's what it was talking about for me. And if you're... Here's another similar quote, and see if you can guess who said this. If you're going to go and do something, go start. Life is simpler than we can sometimes admit. Robert De Niro. Another thing about the present moment, you cannot be conscious and unhappy. And I like a phrase of Anthony de Mello's, which is, true happiness is uncausable. True happiness is uncausable. That means happiness isn't what they might or might not do, or the other side of a job, or whatever. The ego's version of happiness is that, but true happiness is uncausable. That's quite a liberating idea, because it means you already have it, you already are full of it, and it's a matter of losing some ideas, not having to gain anything else. Decision making. This is another practical example of all of this stuff. Around number five, I've again left space for you to write the things that regularly capture or scatter you or whatever, so feel free to colour in, turn this into a paper aeroplane. Decision making. You have there, I'd like to you to write down something that you have to make a decision about. Next to number six. Those of you who sat on the ground, I'd like to tell you what the... Sorry, I'm just whispering to the people sat on the ground while everybody else is writing. The secret to sitting perfectly comfortable on the ground, the most comfortable seating position is the next one. So, if you feel like you want to shift, do move around. Stand up, jump about. This is going to be an hour long, I'm determined. But I did start late, so haha. Okay, decisions. If you can't change the situation, then you've got two choices. You can either leave it or accept it. If you can't change it, and you can't leave the situation, you can only accept it. But if you decide you can't change the situation, you can't leave the situation, and you can't accept the situation, there are a few more choices, actually. You can whinge about the situation. You can become really unhappy about the situation. I'm so a life coach, I'm really sorry. But maybe I can give you a few other things. If you have a decision to make, or maybe a change that you want to bring about in your life, those are your three options, basically. You can change the situation you're in, you can leave the situation you're in, or you can accept the situation as it is. But often the ego gets involved and we find all sorts of other creative reactions to the situations we find ourselves in. For example, are you exhausted about internal battles that you have inside your head? Your ego is not just one voice, it can be many voices. I talked yesterday about the word should appearing in your inner dialogue, in your inner narration. If the word should appears, there are at least two people talking in your head. You might think about the person walking through the city street late at night who's muttering to themselves in very bizarre conversation. That is so going on in each of our heads, honestly, it really is. So they're not mad, they're just it's just on the outside. That kind of chattering and twittering. Another, this phrase I used earlier on, you empower the demons you fight. Inside your own head, you empower all of that. You can become very depressed, very exhausted by empowering the demons you fight. There's one school of thought that says that depression is not the beginning of something. Depression is the end of quite a long result that's happened inside your head. And it started with you generating a need that wasn't answered. And depression and anger are often twin potential reactions a little bit further down the line. What was the need that you generated? What was the need that you depended on that wasn't answered? In order to win, sometimes you need to lose. The first will be last. I do that in seminars. I wait until the right at the end just to clock up brownie points. Or maybe that's not what it meant, I'm not sure. Who was the last person in? Because you're the first. Ha-ha. Another thing that I challenge you with, this deeper part of you, this deeper being, is you actually already know all the answers. It's actually already there. I'd like to say quite a challenging thing in that limitless wisdom is already there. You already do know all the stuff you ever need to know. We just make it way more complicated when we bring it up to the chattering da-da-da-da-da. People get in such a sense of panic by how big the decision is that they've got to make, whereas actually decisions are just decisions. Choosing a pair of shoes or moving house or shall I leave the job? You know, these things become so exhausting, but it's just a decision. But to give you maybe a little help with decision-making, are you a maximiser or a satisficer? There's a lot of research being done into this recently. This is still part of number six, but I didn't have a chance to get this written down. Maximisers are, you're looking for a new car or a new pair of shoes or something. The maximiser is somebody who has a rough idea what they want. They go out, they look at the car, but oh no, the on the garage forecourt there are a few other models. That's kind of blown the whole decision-making process. You now need to look at every model of car that there ever is, ever. And then you go home and then you put the internet on and you do a search for this model of car and you realise you can times that by 10 because it comes out in blue and red. Oh no! The maximising decision technique is you determined to make the maximum best choice ever. The satisficers, I just wanted a car, that one will do. I needed a black pair of shoes, they're black, they'll do, doesn't really matter. We both are able to do both. Do you know who's the happiest people in the world, maximizers or satisficers? Oh, you're so wise. Maximizers, who, I'm not going to be happy unless I've made the right choice and decision here. When they have finally made the decision, the same model for half the price. Yes. But that links with you already know the answer. And I could give you so many examples of myself where I already knew the answer before I set off, but I had to go everywhere just to check. Crazy. Everything. Buying gadgets. Buying rucksacks. Rucksacks to go hiking with. It took me 3 weeks. Every outdoor shop in Bristol ever. Trying them on. Hold on. They do. It's got the outside zip pocket with the single clicky thing. And it can carry my walking poles. But it hasn't got a pouch to carry the water bottle. No. Oh. Okay. Move to the mountains. Buy a sewing machine. Honestly, it makes life an awful lot simpler. Your choice is to decide beforehand, before you enter, before your ego takes you over, is this a maximizing decision, because some of them are, of course, or is this a satisfying decision? Decide beforehand that actually you're going to buy the first thing and go off and have a coffee. Even if it costs a few pounds more, you're going to be way more happy. Maybe happiness is more important than the bit more it costs, or for example. Okay, I wanted to give you...